Chapter 23. As soon as Abdullah and his companions had left the enclosure, Asa approached Willems and stood by his side. He took no notice of her expectant attitude till she touched him gently, when he turned furiously upon her, and, tearing off her face veil, trampled upon it, as though it had been a mortal enemy. She looked at him with a faint smile of patient curiosity, with the puzzled interest of ignorance watching the running of a complicated piece of machinery. After he had exhausted his rage, he stood again severe and unbending, looking down at the fire, but the touch of her fingers at the nape of his neck effaced instantly the hard lines round his mouth. His eyes wavered uneasily. His lips trembled slightly. Starting with the unresisting rapidity of a particle of iron which, quiescent one moment, leaps in the next to a powerful magnet, he moved forward, caught her in his arms, and pressed her violently to his breast. He released her as suddenly, and she stumbled a little, stepped back, breathed quickly through her parted lips, and said in a tone of pleased reproof, "O fool man! And if you had killed me in your strong arms, what would you have done? You want to live. And to run away from me again," he said gently. "Tell me, do you?" She moved towards him with very short steps, her head a little on one side, hands on hips, with a slight balancing of her body. An approach more tantalizing than an escape. He looked on, eager, charmed. She spoke jestingly. "What am I to say to a man who has been away 3 days from me?" "Three," she repeated, holding up playfully three fingers before Willem's eyes. He snatched at the hand, but she was on her guard, and whisked it behind her back. "No," she said. "Cannot be caught. But I will come. I am coming myself because I like. Do not move. Do not touch me with your mighty hands, O child." As she spoke, she made a step nearer, then another. Willems did not stir. Pressing against him, she stood on tiptoe, to look into his eyes, and her own seemed to grow bigger, glistening and tender, appealing and promising. With that look she drew the man's soul away from him through his immobile pupils, and from Willem's features the spark of reason vanished under her gaze, and was replaced by an appearance of physical well-being, an ecstasy of the senses which had taken possession of his rigid body. An ecstasy that drove out regrets, hesitation and doubt, and proclaimed its terrible work by an appalling aspect of idiotic beatitude. He never stirred a limb, hardly breathed, but stood in stiff immobility, absorbing the delight of her close contact by every pore. "Closer, closer," he murmured. Slowly she raised her arms, put them over his shoulders, and clasping her hands at the back of his neck, swung off the full length of her arms. Her head fell back, the eyelids dropped slightly, and her thick hair hung straight down. A mass of ebony touched by the red gleams of the fire. He stood unyielding under the strain, as solid and motionless as one of the big trees of the surrounding forests. And his eyes looked at the modeling of her chin, at the outline of her neck, at the swelling lines of her bosom, with the famished and concentrated expression of a starving man looking at food. She drew herself up to him, and rubbed her head against his cheek slowly and gently. He sighed. She, with her hands still on his shoulders, glanced up at the placid stars, and said, "The night is half gone. We shall finish it by this fire. By this fire you shall tell me all. Your words and Said Abdullah's words. And listening to you, I shall forget the 3 days, because I am good. Tell me, am I good?" he said, dreamily, and she ran off towards the big house. When she came back, balancing a roll of fine mats on her head, he had replenished the fire, and was ready to help her in arranging a couch on the side of it nearest to the hut. She sank down with a quick, but gracefully controlled movement, and he threw himself full length with impatient haste, as if he wished to forestall somebody. She took his head on her knees, and when he felt her hands touching his face, her fingers playing with his hair, he had an expression of being taken possession of. He experienced a sense of peace, of rest, of happiness, and of soothing delight. his hand straight upwards about her neck, and he drew her down so as to have her face above his. Then he whispered, "Wish I could die like this now." She looked at him with her big somber eyes, in which there was no responsive light. His thought was so remote from her understanding that she let the words pass by unnoticed, like the breath of the wind, like the flight of a cloud. Woman though she was, she could not comprehend, in her simplicity, the tremendous compliment of that speech, that whisper of deadly happiness, so sincere, so spontaneous, coming so straight from the heart like every corruption. It was the voice of madness, of a delirious peace, of happiness that is infamous, cowardly, and so exquisite, that the debased mind refuses to contemplate its termination. For to the victims of such happiness the moment of its ceasing is the beginning afresh of that torture which is its price. With her brows slightly knitted in the determined preoccupation of her own desires, she said, "Now tell me all. All the words spoken between you and Said Abdullah." "Tell what? What words?" Her voice recalled back the consciousness that had departed under her touch, and he became aware of the passing minutes, every one of which was like a reproach, of those minutes that falling, slow, reluctant, irresistible into the past, marked his footsteps on the way to perdition. Not that he had any conviction about it, any notion of the possible ending on that painful road. It was an indistinct feeling, a threat of suffering like the confused warning of coming disease, an inarticulate monition of evil made up of fear and pleasure, of resignation and of revolt. He was ashamed of his state of mind. After all, what was he afraid of? Were those scruples? Why that hesitation to think, to speak of what he intended doing? Scruples were for imbeciles. His clear duty was to make himself happy. Did he ever take an oath of fidelity to Lingard? No. Well then he would not let any interest of that old fool stand between Willems and Willems' happiness. Happiness? Was he not, perchance, on a false track? Happiness meant money. Much money. At least he had always thought so till he had experienced those new sensations which... Asa's question, repeated impatiently, interrupted his musings, and looking up at her face shining above him in the dim light of the fire, he stretched his limbs luxuriously, and obedient to her desire, he spoke slowly and hardly above his breath. She, with her head close to his lips, listened absorbed, interested, in attentive immobility. The many noises of the great courtyard were hushed up gradually by the sleep that stilled all voices and closed all eyes. Then somebody droned out a song with a nasal drawl at the end of every verse. He stirred. She put her hand suddenly on his lips and sat upright. There was a feeble coughing, a rustle of leaves, and then a complete silence took possession of the land. A silence cold, mournful, profound. More like death than peace. More hard to bear than the fiercest tumult. As soon as she removed her hand he hastened to speak, so insupportable to him was that stillness perfect and absolute in which his thoughts seemed to ring with the loudness of shouts. "Who was there making that noise?" he asked. "I do not know." "He is gone now," she answered, hastily. "Tell me, you will not return to your people, not without me. Not with me. Do you promise?" "I have promised already. I have no people of my own. Have I not told you that you are everybody to me?" "Ah, yes," she said, slowly, "but I like to hear you say that again every day, and every night, whenever I ask, and never to be angry because I ask. I am afraid of white women who are shameless, and have fierce eyes." She scanned his features close for a moment and added, "Are they very beautiful?" "They must be." "I do not know," he whispered, thoughtfully. "And if I ever did know, looking at you I have forgotten." "Forgotten? And for 3 days and two nights you have forgotten me also. Why? Why were you angry with me, when I spoke at first of Tuan Abdullah, in the days when we lived beside the brook? You remembered somebody then. Somebody in the land whence you come. Your tongue is false. You are white indeed, and your heart is full of deception. I know it. And yet I cannot help believing you when you talk of your love for me. But I am afraid. He felt flattered and annoyed by her vehemence, and said, Well, I am with you now. I did come back. And it was you that went away. When you have helped Abdullah against the Rajalot, who is the first of white men, I shall not be afraid anymore, she whispered. You must believe what I say when I tell you that there never was another woman, that there is nothing for me to regret, and nothing but my enemies to remember. Where do you come from? She said, impulsive and inconsequent, in a passionate whisper. How does that land beyond the great sea from which you come? A land of lies, and of evil from which nothing but misfortune ever comes to us who are not white. Did you not at first ask me to go there with you? That is why I went away. I shall never ask you again. And there is no woman waiting for you there? No, said Willems, firmly. She bent over him. Her lips hovered above his face and her long hair brushed his cheeks. You taught me the love of your people which is of the devil, she murmured, and bending still lower, she said faintly, like this? Yes, like this, he answered very low, in a voice that trembled slightly with eagerness, and she pressed suddenly her lips to his while he closed his eyes in an ecstasy of delight. There was a long interval of silence. She stroked his head with gentle touches, and he lay dreamily, perfectly happy but for the annoyance of an indistinct vision of a well-known figure, a man going away from him, and diminishing in a long perspective of fantastic trees, whose every leaf was an eye looking after that man, who walked away growing smaller, but never getting out of sight for all his steady progress. He felt a desire to see him vanish, a hurried impatience of his disappearance, and he watched for it with a careful and irksome effort. There was something familiar about that figure. Why? Himself. He gave a sudden start, and opened his eyes, quivering with the emotion of that quick return from so far, of finding himself back by the fire with the rapidity of a flash of lightning. It had been half a dream. He had slumbered in her arms for a few seconds. Only the beginning of a dream, nothing more. But it was some time before he recovered from the shock of seeing himself go away so deliberately, so definitely, so unguardedly. And going away where? Now, if he had not woke up in time, he would never have come back again from there, from whatever place he was going to. He felt indignant. It was like an evasion, like a prisoner breaking his parole, that thing slinking off stealthily while he slept. He was very indignant, and was also astonished at the absurdity of his own emotions. She felt him tremble, and murmuring tender words, pressed his head to her breast. Again he felt very peaceful with a peace that was as complete as the silence round them. He muttered, You are tired, Asa. She answered so low that it was like a sigh shaped in two faint words. I shall watch your sleep, O child. He lay very quiet and listened to the beating of her heart. That sound, light, rapid, persistent, and steady, her very life beating against his cheek, gave him a clear perception of secure ownership, strengthened his belief in his possession of that human being, was like an assurance of the vague felicity of the future. There were no regrets, no doubts, no hesitation now. Had there ever been? All that seemed far away, ages ago as unreal, and pale as the fading memory of some delirium. All the anguish, suffering, strife of the past days, the humiliation and anger of his downfall, all that was an infamous nightmare, a thing born in sleep to be forgotten, and leave no trace, and true life was this. This dreamy immobility with his head against her heart, that beat so steadily. He was broad awake now, with that tingling wakefulness of the tired body which succeeds to the few refreshing seconds of irresistible sleep, and his wide open eyes looked absently at the doorway of Omer's hut. The reed walls glistened in the light of the fire, the smoke of which, thin and blue, drifted slanting in a succession of rings and spirals across the doorway, whose empty blackness seemed to him impenetrable and enigmatical like a curtain hiding vast spaces full of unexpected surprises. This was only his fancy, but it was absorbing enough to make him accept the sudden appearance of a head coming out of the gloom, as part of his idle fantasy, or as the beginning of another short dream, of another vagary of his overtired brain. A face with drooping eyelids, old, thin, and yellow, above the scattered white of a long beard that touched the earth. A head without a body, only a foot above the ground, turning slightly from side to side on the edge of the circle of light, as if to catch the radiating heat of the fire on either cheek in succession. He watched it in passive amazement, growing distinct, as if coming nearer to him, and the confused outlines of a body crawling on all fours came out, creeping inch by inch towards the fire, with a silent and all but imperceptible movement. He was astounded at the appearance of that blind head dragging that crippled body behind, without a sound, without a change in the composure of the sightless face, which was plain 1 second, blurred the next in the play of the light that drew it to itself steadily. A mute face with a crisp between its lips. This was no dream. Omer's face. But why? What was he after? He was too indolent in the happy languor of the moment to answer the question. It darted through his brain and passed out, leaving him free to listen again to the beating of her heart, to that precious and delicate sound which filled the quiet immensity of the night. Glancing upwards, he saw the motionless head of the woman looking down at him in a tender gleam of liquid white between the long eyelashes, whose shadow rested on the soft curve of her cheek. And under the caress of that look, the uneasy wonder and the obscure fear of that apparition, crouching and creeping in turns towards the fire that was its guide, were lost, were drowned in the quietude of all his senses, as pain is drowned in the flood of drowsy serenity that follows upon a dose. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.